Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, where everything is just interesting. Nothing is really spectacular. With me, Robin, today are Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Robin. How are you holding up?
I'm all right, thank you. Safe and sound in these turbulent times. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going a little bit stir crazy. I've started scratching days on the wall.
Are you counting them correctly, though? Have you scratched the right number of days?
I've scratched like 3 months into the wall, and it's been 2 weeks. So, yeah, I'm going a bit mad.
And Martin, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not going completely mad, because it's a good thing that's being done, right? People are self-isolating for a good reason.
Yeah.
But I'm losing track of what the day is. I have to be reminded. Like, it really confused me yesterday, because the bins are meant to go out on Wednesday. Yesterday was Wednesday for those listening at some point in the future. Went outside and no one had taken their bins out. And I was like, I swear it's Wednesday. Came back inside. I was like, oh, what day is it, Beth? And she was like, oh, it's definitely Wednesday. People just hadn't bothered to put their bins out. It's a new world we're living in.
Like, everybody else had forgotten it was Wednesday as well.
Yes. Everyone had forgotten except for me. So I doubted myself.
You're the one sane man in an insane world, Martin.
Exactly. But other than the bin debacle, yeah, all good.
As always, I had the last laugh.
Needless to say.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting when this is all over and everybody comes out, emerges from their hovels, steps blinkingly into the sunlight and thinks, what do I do now?
We were saying that earlier. Like, what is actually the integration going to be like back into society when we're not working from home anymore and you actually have to go outside? Is there going to be a weird, like, few weeks when people are more kind of have social anxiety and that kind of thing a little bit more, or less socially aware because they haven't spoken to people?
It's going to go one way or the other, isn't it? It's going to be like people will either be anxious and worried about speaking, or it'll be the complete opposite, and they'll have realised that actually it's amazing to speak to people, and everyone will be hugging in the streets and dancing.
That's true.
And probably spreading more of the COVID, which hasn't quite gone away as well.
Yep. Oh yeah, that's going to be a huge explosion, and then this will all start again. It'll be great.
Yes.
It'll be great. But apart from speculating about the future, what have you guys learned this week?
Well, I've learned... Shall I tell you thing I've learned this week? Do you guys know about the world's oldest cats?
No. I can't say I do.
Cream Puff and Grandpa Rex Allen were their names.
Oh, wow.
They're dead.
They were 38 years old and 34 years old. They lived to
38 years
English,
old.
Right, in English, sorry.
In English, human. not in cat years. In human years.
In cat years, that'll make them about 5. In cat years, how old would that be? That'd be like
38 times 5, 180,
190,
something like
175,
that.
175,
isn't it?
That is crazy. I don't know.
No, more than that.
Anyway, the thing about these two cats, though, they were both owned by the same person. Jake Perry of Austin, Texas, owned both of these cats, and he revealed what he believed to be the key to their longevity.
Yeah.
Which was a diet of dry cat food supplemented with broccoli, eggs, turkey bacon, coffee with cream, and red wine.
Those cats would have stunk.
That was a very luxurious lifestyle.
It gets better as well. Like, he sounds like a very good owner, obviously. But apparently every 2 days, Cream Puff received an eyedropper full of red wine, which Perry said circulated the arteries. Apparently it's good for their liver or something.
I don't know. The opposite. You'd be the opposite, wouldn't you?
Or kidneys. Maybe I'm thinking kidneys. Bad for the liver.
So when he says red wine, he was like a little eye drop in there.
Yeah, like
mouth.
A little tiny drop of red.
I was imagining he was giving like a whole glass of red wine and they were just like lapping it up, you know, the way they drink milk. No,
I think he's a saucer.
Yeah. He also had set up his garage into like a movie theater which played nature documentaries for them. And there were wooden steps built around his house and there was an outdoor screened off enclosure in his yard. So it sounds like they lived a good life, these cats.
Sounds great for these cats. I bet they were
fat. It really doesn't sound like, but it looks like they got a little bit of exercise, didn't it? You know,
there's
ways of going around, going outside, even though it's screened off.
There was some exercise, mental stimulation, and then a good diet, it sounds like, you know. Maybe not coffee with cream. I'm not sure what that does, but everything else, the broccoli, eggs, turkey, sure, yeah.
Wow, I mean, something's going right. I've been living for that long. Either that or he's gone completely senile and they died off years ago and he's got new ones and forgotten. I mean, one of the two.
It's
very appropriate, though, for cats. It sounds like if you have to take any kind of special measures to keep cats alive far longer than they would naturally live, it's that kind of excessive pampering. Suits cats down to a T, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, they live nearly twice as long as most other cats. That's insane.
It's crazy.
Yeah, my cat when I was a kid lived until it was about 19, and I thought that was very, very good going.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
really
kind of
going.
What you expect, right? Like around that.
Yeah, I mean, this was the 90s, so, you know, things were slightly different. Well, I learned this week about the Battle of Bamber Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
You heard about this battle in World War II?
I haven't, no.
No.
Well, it was a battle that took place on British soil.
Oh.
Yes. So Bamber Bridge was home to American servicemen during World War II. It's a village in Lancashire.
Oh, okay.
And in 1943, there were race riots in Detroit, in America. And as a result of this, within the American service forces, racial tensions, which were heightened at this time, started to kick off. So the military police and some of the black soldiers got into a conflict, and this caused the Battle of Bamber Bridge.
Oh, so it was, it was, they were all American soldiers?
Yes, they were. And at the time in this place in Lancashire, the pubs around the area, a lot of the Americans came in as they usually do and tried to enforce their own laws and rules. And they wanted basically the black soldiers to be separate from the rest of the servicemen in like the local pubs.
That is ridiculous.
And apparently, according to a lot of locals at the time and reports, the local villagers didn't like this and put up signs in all of the local pubs saying that the pubs were for black soldiers only.
Ooh.
I know, a bit of a kickback on that one.
Well done.
And and this caused heightening of the tensions and a bit of a battle. So this was on the night of June the 24th, 1943. Mm-hmm. They're in this pub called the Ye Old Hob Inn, and they had last orders around 10 p.m. And some of the soldiers were refused after this, of course, as you are. After last orders, no more drinks, and so two of these passing military police officers who were white, basically came into this pub and tried to arrest one of the soldiers, one of these black soldiers who was there asking for more drinks, and as a result there was an argument between the two of them, a battle took place, including like weapons were fired. And the military police were like hiding behind barricades and shooting at the soldiers. So it was infighting with the ranks, and six people were injured, and one of the soldiers died as well as a result of this battle.
Oh, wow.
Which is mad. Yeah. So it just kind of shows that even at a time where supposedly everyone was allied, this racial segregation within the American armed forces was causing conflict and even resulted in death at this time. So this particular regiment from the 8th Air Force, a lot of the leaders of it were actually known to have been demoted from other places to take control of this particular regiment, which had quite a lot of black soldiers in it. It was seen as like a demotion to go to this regiment, so they weren't the best leaders either, and a lot of them were kind of a little bit dubious when it came to racial tensions within the regiment as well. So that just like exacerbated this. So it's pretty mad that within England during the war there was indeed a battle.
All of American soldiers, and it all kicked off in a pub.
A tiny little village pub. Yeah,
that is crazy.
I'm surprised that hasn't kind of become like a movie based on real events.
Yeah, it's true.
It sounds kind of like Hot Fuzz almost, but set in World War II.
It does a bit, but more tragic.
But more tragic.
It's going to happen now. Now that Martin's mentioned it, this will be a film. It'll be announced in the next couple of years.
You'd expect so.
Turns into one of those tragicomic British period dramas that we like to make.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a crazy story. I can understand that. Really sad as well. Really sad that kind of racial tension and poison came over here.
Yeah. I mean, I do like the part where the local Brits, because of course we're very patriotic, aren't we? Yeah. Put up a sign saying "Black soldiers only," and very much disapproved of the military police and the other soldiers, and definitely supported those who were, you know, who were being preyed upon. Mm. But at the same time, that could have been a hindsight looking back on it, you know.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I know that for a fact that Britain certainly wasn't that different from other parts of the world, despite segregation laws not being in place.
Yeah, and still isn't. I was surprised when you said that as part of that story. I was fully expecting you to say the opposite, that they put up signs saying "whites only." So I'm pleased they did it the other way around.
Exactly.
It's weird when you think that like they were fighting about that when at that time, you know, you would have thought they would have. We had a common enemy at that point. It's mad when you think that like that kind of tension was going on when there were literal Nazis. Do you know what I mean?
Very true.
Yeah,
and of course there was, after the incident, there was court martialing of people who were accused of rioting and mutiny even because of them fighting against their own superior officers. But of course, when the information kind of came out about racial slurs being used in this bar and about what had been going on, a lot of these were kind of dropped.
Mm.
So it's a sad moment from the past, tinged with hopefully some good in the fact that the locals were supporting these soldiers who weren't being treated very well.
Yeah, yeah. And despite the death, it seems to have ended well, for lack of a better word. But I learned something that's not as complex and quite not as provocative, but it is to do with prejudice, actually, this week.
Okay. Mm.
And it's to do with the word Cockney.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you know where it comes from?
Enlighten me.
Chicken's knees.
I mean, it is to do with chickens, kind of. But no, the word Cockney, today everybody knows it to refer to EastEnders from London. But originally, it was a pejorative term used to describe all city dwellers. Londoners, which is how it kind of got associated with the East End, London in particular. But it originates from, or is connected to, a term that used to be used in Chaucer's day in the 15th century, nestlecock. Technically, still a word that we use in English, but I've never heard anybody say that word. But a nestlecock is the last hatched or the weakest chick in a brood.
Okay.
So the earliest recorded instance of the word Cockney is from 1362 in Piers Plowman, and that literally means a small misshapen egg. I being egg and cockin being chicken. So cock and I.
Interesting.
Cockney. Egg.
Oh. So it's not at all a flattering term then?
Not at all flattering. It's funny because they've got so much pride in it now, haven't they?
Like, oh, exactly,
Cockney.
Exactly.
Yeah, geezer.
Yeah. That's interesting. And it's, yeah, they're not from the East End, from any part of London. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and originally any city. And then
any city at all, yeah.
But I think London probably was where it originated because London was like the only real proper city we had for a very long time. All our other cities were cities in technicality, but they're all quite small.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that it became like a... I wonder how long it took for that to become a kind of, you know, like a prideful word of, I'm Cockney, you know. It doesn't sound like a nice word, does it?
No, it's not. It's not Cockney. Well, apparently it was around 1660 that it became associated with the East End of London.
Hmm.
And I assume that's when it became a point of pride for the locals to say, I'm a Cockney. Before we move on to our big discussion in today's podcast, which is going to be about the British monarchy and whether or not they should or can stick around for very much longer, especially given recent events. And before we get into our quiz, which is going to have a particular theme about coronavirus, as in it's going to be about not mentioning coronavirus. That's going to be a challenge.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'd like to say a massive thank you to all of our Patreon supporters who've been wonderful and are keeping us going, particularly as we're starting this channel and starting to grow. But given the things that are going on in the world around us, we just want to make it clear and send out this message to all of you that apart from hoping you're well, we want you to put yourselves first. And we really, really do appreciate all the support you're giving us, and it's really helping us. But don't please prioritize us over your own needs, given that we know everybody's going through a lot of hardship and difficulties at the moment.
Yeah, well said.
Exactly.
Mm.
No, it's very true, and that's the thing. Like, there's no sense of us ever being offended or disappointed by anything. Like, we're very grateful that you're watching this and that you're, you know, supporting us in that way. We would never expect anything else, and we just want everyone to know that we would never feel any differently about our audience or anything regardless. So thank you very much, but yeah, don't feel like you have to, because you don't, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. We won't take it personally, and we won't mind at all. And we are really grateful to everybody who's continued to give so far. But please
do. Thank you, everyone, so much. Ditto what you guys both said. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Just prioritize yourself at this point. We'll be fine either way. Just make sure you're doing okay as well.
Yeah, because, you know, when I get kicked out of my flat, I'll just live with Alex. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. The sofa back there is for Robin. I've already got a pillow. It's
all sorted. We've got our backup plan. It's fine.
indeed. So, Alex,
yes,
are you going to go first with your news story this week?
Sure. So my news this week comes from the land down under.
That sounded Cockney.
I was reeling from the Cockney story. So this is a ghost story. There's a ghost hunter down in Australia who was walking in Swanview Tunnel, which is in Hovia in Australia, and he posted.
I have no idea where that is.
Yeah,
no,
I don't know either. I'll Google it. But he basically took a video and posted on Reddit this creepy tunnel, and he says in the video, "Talk into this little device, and we'll be able to hear you." Okay, so he's trying to talk to a ghost, and then he alleges, and I've listened to the video; it does sound like it, that the ghost calls him the C word. You know. The word that rhymes with hunt.
I see.
You see. Exactly.
I mean, you just saying that will probably get this age restricted, Alex. Well done.
Sorry. Is there a sample of the audio recording that you can listen to verify his story?
There is. Do you want me to play it?
Well, maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not.
I don't know if it will come up. No, it won't. Will it?
But do you believe him, Alex? That's the important thing. Yeah.
Okay. I've heard it. And it does sound like it a little bit.
Okay. He could be hearing what he wants to hear, right?
Yeah.
He wants to be called that.
Maybe.
Desperately.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess what I found interesting with this is that you never really think of ghosts. You imagine them to say something like, ooh, back away. You know, I don't know.
Back away.
I'm haunting you or something. Or I died for 50 years ago.
I died in this tunnel.
Beware.
I don't know. I find it amusing, a ghost just like swearing at someone.
I mean, maybe it's an Australian ghost we're talking about here.
Yeah,
exactly.
They love
right.
They love that word.
It's probably
I've seen the videos like that guy punching a kangaroo. He says it like 5 times.
But yeah, some people did disagree and said that they thought it said "don't talk to him" instead of you know,
it's quite
hunt.
Quite different.
That's a lot more expressive than the first option.
Is yeah, a different number of syllables for sure.
And someone else said that to me it sounds like he said "can't" as in, you know, C-A-N-T.
Also in an Australian accent as well.
Can't.
Yeah. I can see that being confused. Yeah.
Maybe it's the ghost of Immanuel Kant then.
Maybe, yeah. The philosopher is just hanging out in this tunnel in Australia.
Yeah, as you do.
is this where he died, really? that's interesting. I mean, Alex, we went to that ghost. What was it? Seance, ghosty thing, didn't we? For the release of Annabelle.
Oh, what were those haunted objects that you went to?
Yeah, we went.
There was that very rude ghost.
There was a rude, cheeky one, wasn't there?
Cheeky
so maybe,
little ghost.
Maybe there is that characteristic might actually exist and being shown here.
I suppose ghosts come in all shapes and sizes from all walks of life. It's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I just remember that guy just kept insulting it. It's like, what are you doing? It's a ghost.
Yes, stop it. We want to come out of here alive.
Yeah. So,
you were genuinely scared, aren't you?
Just so you know, it's like on the outskirts of Perth, it looks like. So if you're ever hanging around in Hovia in Australia and find yourself in a tunnel, then listen out, because there may be a very rude ghost just cursing at you. So
yeah, don't be alarmed if you hear a random voice cursing at you when you're down there. Martin, what's your weird news?
So mine's not actually that weird, but I thought it was too good to not share. Because it's good news, and at the moment I think we're a little bit short of good news and everything's dominated by bad news. So what could be better than news that there has been a new blood test that has been created that can detect 50 different types of cancer?
Oh,
wow.
What?
Which is pretty
that's
mad.
Amazing.
Right?
Yeah, that's great.
So, like, I think currently it's pretty difficult to detect different cancers because you have to be looking out for certain specific things that only exist in one particular test. So if you're checking for bone cancer, you're having to test like the bones, or if you're looking for a brain tumor, you have to test that. It's with CT scans and all the rest of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas this particular test tests DNA, and it tests the DNA that's shed by tumors that then circulate in the blood.
Oh, that's clever. Oh. That's very clever.
Which is mad. So what it's doing is it's actually looking at the chemical changes of the DNA as opposed to looking at specific types of cancer itself.
Right.
So this allows a much wider range of cancers to be tested. Now, they're going into trials, and it will take a long, long time before we actually see the results. But the initial trials that they've done look quite convincing. But it has to be said that the trials that they've done so far are, of course, on people that they know have cancer, because they don't want to waste money on testing people that thousands of people that definitely don't have it, right? So they're trying to test for positive results where they think they're going to be there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because it just makes more sense. So they're looking at this particular DNA, and it's chemical structure to try and find out different bits of cancer. So they tested basically 2,800 patients, 1,500 of whom had cancer and 1,500 who didn't, and then looked at the what's called the methylation patterns, which are these changes in DNA. It's a fancy word for it.
Oh, okay.
Showing if they had cancer or not, and the system correctly detected the disease was present 44% of the time, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're testing for so many cancers, it actually is quite a wide breadth of information you can get from that.
It's a great start, at least, that's for sure.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, of course, it's much more useful when detecting later stage cancer. So in people that had stage 4 cancer, it detected it 93% of the time. whereas this fell down to just 18% of people who had just had stage one cancer.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when it's much more prevalent in later stage cancers, it seems like it's, as you'd expect, for it to be a much more accurate system of detecting it.
Yeah.
So it's not the be-all and end-all. I'm sure that the tests that exist right now will still be conducted going into the future, but it seems like another avenue that can be taken, and perhaps in the future a cost-effective avenue when it covers so many broad bases of different cancers that people have.
That's true. It's much simpler, right, to just take someone's blood sample and then test that, as opposed to what they're doing at the moment. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Potentially great. Yeah.
But it sounds like really great news, yeah.
It's potentially changing the whole way that cancers are tested for, but we are in the early stages, and it's difficult to test for people in early stage cancer. So those are the things that they're trying to get around and the hurdles they're trying to jump over. But we'll see how that progresses.
Oh, that's incredible.
That's good news. That is good news. And that's cheered me up a little bit. So thank you for that, Martin.
No problem.
Well, I'm going to drag the level of this podcast down a bit with a much more lowbrow story.
Okay.
So on March the 29th, in Washington State, just a few days ago, a high-speed car chase on Interstate 5 began when a 1996 Buick allegedly struck two vehicles at the Boeing access exit in Seattle shortly before 1 p.m. The suspect vehicle was traveling over 100 miles per hour, and they've got this footage as well on the highway, when troopers began pursuing it. And when police finally stopped the car at around 1:15 p.m., so after a 15 or 20-minute chase, they had to deploy spike strips on the road to burst the tires.
Mm-hmm.
They found a pit bull in the driver's seat.
What?
What?
And a 51-year-old man in the passenger side.
No. No, he swapped seats to try and get the pit bull dobbed in.
Well, troopers said the man told them. The man told them he was teaching his dog how to drive. But it was all right because the man was controlling the steering wheel.
Wow.
What?
The man is facing several charges, including driving under the influence, reckless driving, hit and run, and a felony eluding.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Wait, where was this? Washington?
Washington State, Seattle, yeah.
Seattle, it's not really a crazy place, is it, Seattle? I mean, there's quite a few serial killers who've come from Seattle, but you usually think of Texas and Florida as being these kind of places.
Yeah, in fairness, I was waiting for the story to start in Florida, and it didn't happen. When you said Washington, I was like, wow, well, this must be really serious.
Yeah. Wow, yeah, I guess you get crazies everywhere, don't you?
You do. Well, who knows, maybe he was onto something. If he'd been successful in teaching his dog to drive. Think of the phenomenon that would have been.
Oh yeah, I mean, America's Got Talent, straight on there. Mm. Winner's medal, he's dreaming of it.
Straight on there in a Buick.
I mean, like, how? I'm confused at how this worked. So, what do you think, that was a cover story and he swapped seats, or do you think he was actually teaching his dog to drive? I mean, how would the dog reach the pedals? I don't understand this.
I'm confused too. The article didn't go into my great detail, and there's no photographs of the dog in the car. So I think that's why they emphasised troopers said the man told them, because I think maybe even the police don't quite believe what he was trying to do.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Funny, isn't it?
Yeah. But I like the idea, and you know, if it's just a lie, and he's trying to, I don't know, get out of it somehow. It's imaginative. You gotta give him credit for that.
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, the thing is, it's not much better, is it? Oh, it's my dog driving. That's no better. that doesn't get you off the felonies.
No, it doesn't.
Maybe the dog was holding him at gunpoint.
So. In fact, it's possibly worse.
Yeah, because you're just so negligent. You're letting a dog drive.
Yeah. Madness. I mean, you could get away with just being criminal, not just being insane, couldn't you?
Yeah.
An insanity plea might work.
Oh, that's maybe, true. Yeah, I might be able to get away with that. Although, is it against the law for an animal to drive a car?
Good question.
If it's not explicitly against the law, sure, I mean, the law might say you need a driver's license, but that's besides the point.
Who put the key in the ignition? That's what I'm asking.
Did they take some paw prints of the steering wheel?
Breathalyze the dog.
Yes. There was actually a note in the article that said it was not clear if the pit bull will be charged in connection with the incident.
So they've got a bad enough reputation as it is. an unfairly bad reputation.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So he's probably, I bet he was using that, wasn't he? He's using that as an excuse, his out. He's a pit bull. What else do you expect him to do?
Well, he's trying to take advantage of natural prejudice against pit bulls.
Exactly.
Wow, that's cynical. That's very cynical. Well, shall we move on to our major question of the day?
Yes.
Let's do it. Yeah.
This is a question that I think keeps coming up. It comes up all the time, but it's come up in the last few weeks in particular because of certain individuals' actions. But the question is, how much longer will the British monarchy survive?
It's a big question.
It is a big question.
What do you think initially?
Initially, it feels like one of those institutions that will never go away.
I agree. I disagree with it. For the most part, I do some of the arguments that people make. I do understand. I don't think they're necessarily legitimate. Like when people say it brings in lots of tourist revenue and they're not doing anything wrong and they do lots for charity. Yeah, I accept all of that. It doesn't necessarily mean I think there should be an elitist, unelected power who have a lot more influence and power and money that they don't necessarily deserve over the rest of us. But I understand those points. But I think that it's too ingrained in our society, regardless of how approval ratings change over the years. I think it will be there. I think it will endure.
Okay, yeah. So you're quite optimistic then about the monarchy's chances, Martin.
I don't know if it is being optimistic. I think it's being realistic. If you look at how many people actually back the monarchy in this country, it's well over 50%. I think it's in the 60s, right? 60-something percent?
Yeah, according to a YouGov survey taken in February 2020, it's 62%.
62%. Still a majority.
February 2020. Right? And that was after all the Prince Andrew stuff, was it?
Yes.
That is true. Which is pretty shocking, yeah.
Now that you brought it up, Alex, shall we just list some of the major events in recent weeks and recent months that have called into question the value of the monarchy?
Sure. So how far back do we want to go? There was the whole Prince Philip driving his Range Rover at 96.
Yeah, there was that.
And going into a car crash, which prompted people to ask, why is he driving a Range Rover at 96?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got his own rap sheet, isn't he? It's a mile long.
He does indeed, yeah, in terms of remarks he's made that have insulted people.
When you said how far should we go back, I was thinking, what, we're going to go back to Edward VII? abdicating from the throne, putting the monarchy in. I mean, the thing is, if someone can abdicate from the throne, putting it into a little bit of, I don't know. I don't know if he was undermining it massively then, but if someone abdicates, it's a big shake-up in the royal family.
Yeah.
A few bad headlines, no matter how serious they can be, is something that the monarchy can get over for sure, just because they have the power and influence to be able to hush-hush a lot of that and distance themselves.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, scandal is a big problem for the royal family because it hits them harder than it usually hits most other famous figures, doesn't it? And, of course, recently we've had Prince Andrew, as you mentioned, his connections with Jeffrey Epstein, who committed suicide under very controversial circumstances in 2019. And of course, Prince Andrew has had to step back from all his royal duties in response to the reaction to his behaviour and his connection with Jeffrey Epstein. And then you've got Prince Charles, just in the last couple of weeks, was positively tested for COVID-19. And apart from the fact that, people call into question what happens if the heir to the throne dies before the current monarch has passed away, you've got this question of, in Britain at least, we have this problem with continuing under-testing for COVID-19. And they're only testing people who are being admitted to hospital with COVID-19 severe symptoms. And they're not testing frontline health workers. So people are saying, why does Prince Charles get tested? We could talk about that in a minute if you like. And then, of course, we've got the behaviour of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, who also stepped back from all of the royal duties that were expected of them so they could have a quote-unquote a normal life. And they've moved to California now, which apart from New York, I feel is like the other hotbed of COVID-19 in America, isn't it? California.
It does seem to be.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about that is, of course, that I remember it, and I don't know if you guys remember it this way, but when the whole kerfuffle happened about Harry and Meghan announcing very unexpectedly, even for the royal family, that they were going to step back and move to the North American continent, they mentioned that they were going to live in Canada.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
But suddenly...
They initially went to Canada, right?
They did, but they didn't spend very long there. They seem to have gone to Canada and then just hopped over the border to California. It seems like a little bit of a workaround almost. And of course, President Trump tweeted very openly this week about questioning who exactly was going to pay for their security. Rather pointlessly, I think, because he's not a member of the royal family, so America isn't obliged to pay for his security. And I don't think Harry and Meghan have asked for their security to be paid for. So I'm not entirely sure what Trump was going on there.
They haven't asked me either, and I'm not going to pay. It's a political point scoring thing of I'm not taking any crap for people too stupid to realise that it doesn't actually mean anything.
Mm. Mm. And I think it wasn't too long ago, just a few years, when didn't our government change the law so that the firstborn child of would become the heir to the throne? Whereas before that, until very recently, it was still the firstborn son would be the heir to the throne.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think when Princess, is it Charlotte, the son of William and Kate was born, they changed the law so that she could become a monarch when the time came. Because although we've had our fair share of queens, usually that's happened because male heirs haven't existed. You know, they've either died young or they weren't born.
Was that really still the case? That's remarkable.
That feels like an ancient custom that's been brought up to progressive standards.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the issues, though, isn't it? They're having to try and modernise. But for a lot of people that respect and support the monarchy, they don't necessarily want that to be the case. So there's this definite conflict between people that are very much supportive of traditional values of the monarchy, and people that want to see it as to progress into the 21st century, and then people that just don't give a crap about it regardless.
Yeah, I think like for a lot of people, the monarchy's nice. You know, it's nice. It's nice having figureheads. The queen's, you know, the queen's cute, and a lot of people. I think a lot of people think that they genuinely put a nice face on the country. But as you mentioned, Robin, with the whole COVID-19 testing of Prince Charles, it's this whole kind of COVID-19, and I think on a broader sense as well, has really kind of highlighted how important like underpaid people are in society, and then this like sheer gap between the super rich elite people. It's like how do they even get the testing? I don't even understand that. Who do they contact for that?
Private hospitals, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just pay a lot of money for it.
But people generally like, you know, they like the idea of it. But when you really think about the advantages that they get for nothing, for being like born into it, it's pretty weird when you think about it.
It's very much the epitome. It doesn't seem like it most of the time, but when there's a situation like this, it brings back the old images, doesn't it, of the royals from hundreds of years ago. Living like royals, and then the paupers dying in the street.
It's
the modern day example, and it's laid very, very clear and very, very bare for all to see when there's a situation like there has been with Prince Charles, where he gets tested immediately with very mild symptoms, yet there's people who are on the front line of the NHS who are dying as a result of not being tested. The class divide is there as it has always been. It's just been masked via a progressive veneer.
Exactly.
Of course, one could argue that the royal family, by their mere existence, actually distracts from the real class issues in our society, because they're so kind of isolated in their white tower. They're such a kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? They're such an obvious target that you could argue they distract from all the other social injustices going on in our society.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to point at them and say, well, they've got all these problems. They're they're part of the problem. They're symptomatic of everything that's wrong. And you kind of don't look at the billionaires standing just a few feet to the left of them, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
And but, also, I guess the billionaires, like, people can say, well, you know, at least they earned their money. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
In a very distorted way.
Yeah.
We've spoken about this already.
Yeah, we've spoken about that. A few podcasts ago.
Whereas, but I mean, look at them royals. They're just living on handouts, you know.
Yeah.
You literally wear a gold crown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At least I don't. Jeff Bezos is like, at least I don't wear a crown. God, that would be ridiculous.
I do 20, have. Yeah, 19 million a day or whatever. 9 million a day or whatever it is.
He probably goes to bed on a pile of gold.
Oh, no, sorry.
Like a dragon.
It's an hour.
Seriously, is it?
Yeah.
I think it's 9 million an hour. Yes.
I can't believe that. That's absolutely insane. So just to put things into perspective, by comparison, in 2019, the grant from British taxpayers to the royal family to cover Richard was $104 million.
Okay. That's a lot of money.
There's a lot of money. Mm. And the Queen herself has a net worth of about $530 million as of 2016. So it's probably, well, it could be a bit higher now. But of course, that's all in hard assets, like all the palaces she has and the massive art collection.
Mm-hmm.
And there's stuff that's priceless, like the Da Vinci drawings that she has.
Yeah.
No one
yeah.
can put a value on those things.
And she has a McDonald's.
Does she?
Yeah. There's a McDonald's on one part of her land, and technically it's belongs to the royal family.
And then it's just all the land that they own as well, right? Like, Duchy of Lancaster and somewhere else that it's their private land, right? It's like 60,000 acres or something mad that they own.
I mean, the fact is, it is like a lot of very, very, very wealthy people. A lot of it is inherited wealth, which some people might say belongs to them as it's, you know, been earned by their family or whatever. But at the same time, a lot of the inherited wealth has come from the taxpayer. And I think that's where a lot of it differs from other very super rich people in people's minds. It's like a double whammy. Not only is it inherited and they haven't earned it, but it's also yours and my money as a result of that, adding to the pile.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like when there's a celebrity scandal, it's, you know, people judge that celebrity. But when the celebrity scandal is one of the royal family, we judge it like 50 times as much because we're invested in that family as well, you know?
Yeah. I must say, from on the whole, they seem like decent people on the whole. If you go through the royal family, there are exceptions, but they seem like relatively nice people. So on a personal level, I've got nothing against them.
Exactly.
Just the institution. Yeah.
Genuinely, I think that's what makes this conversation interesting, is because they do seem like really genuine, nice people.
Apart from a couple
of notable examples, yeah. And there's this kind of like, well, they haven't done anything particularly wrong. So is it, what are they going to do to rile up enough people for this to actually change, you know?
Yeah. Well, so it sounds like we have answered the question of whether we think or not they should exist. Alex, you're now segueing quite nicely into the question, will they continue to exist for the foreseeable future?
Exactly, yeah.
Like you say, they're still popular. As we said, there's a survey. Latest survey is 62% of people approve of the monarchy. I think it's 22% disapprove. The other whatever percentage, don't know.
So that's not many who disapprove, really.
That's less than a quarter of the population. You know, elections need more than that for parties to win. So it doesn't sound like the monarchy is going to be legislated away anytime soon.
I mean, does that point alone go back to almost the equivalent of personality politics? People aren't looking at what the overall standing of the monarchy is, or what they're just looking at the people in the monarchy and they go, oh, I quite like the Queen. Oh, I think Prince Charles is he's all right. I think that Prince Harry always a bit of a laugh, isn't he? And they're thinking about the personalities and whether they should continue to do what they do as opposed to the institution.
No, I think you're right. Yeah, and interestingly, right in front of me, I have the results of a YouGov poll, which was measuring the popularity of the individuals in the royal family.
Okay, right. I wonder who's at the bottom.
Well, let's get that out of the way then, shall we? So the total positive opinion of Prince Andrew as of the 10th of January 2020 was 22%.
I'm amazed.
Really
that
high?
Wow.
So as many people disapprove of the royal family as they do of Prince Andrew. As a proof of him, sorry.
I feel like there's going to be a baseline around 20% of people who, no matter what the royal family does, they are like diehard royalists and will defend whatever they do.
Or idiots who like the royal family but don't know who Prince Andrew is.
Yeah, or that.
That's possible, yeah. I mean, total negative for Prince Andrew was 58%.
Okay.
That's only just over half.
I know. The don't knows was 20%. Which is, I guess, people who like Pizza Express and kind of can't decide if they agree with him or not.
They like Pizza Express.
That is shocking.
I forgot about that part of the news regarding that.
Oh, yeah. Pizza Express Woking, wasn't it? Pizza Express Woking?
Pizza Express in Woking, yeah.
These people that just can't sweat that love Prince Andrew.
Okay, so I guess he's at the bottom of the pile.
He's at the bottom of the pile. Can you guess who's at the top of the pile?
I'm going to go for...
I reckon William. The Queen.
William.
In a way, you're both right. The Queen is 82%. William is 81%.
81?
Oh.
81. 82 and 81. Oh, so they're pretty much as positive, as popular as each other.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. Pretty crazy, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, interesting, Kate Middleton, Kate Middleton, is 76% approval.
Yeah, okay.
I'm surprised she's 5% below William. I'd have thought they're like a package deal.
I think some people possibly view her as a little bit, what's the word? That she's all smiles and maybe there isn't as much to her as a smile. I've heard that being... I don't know her at all, how can I possibly judge on her personality other than what I see on the television? But I've heard that some people think that she's, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a veneer there.
Yeah, that's...
slighting, by the way.
Yeah. No. But that's also the misfortune of being who she is and the position she's in. She is the wife of...
Exactly. And because she's she's not by blood a royal, and some people have an issue with that, right? She was a quote-unquote commoner.
Yes. I wonder as well how her public approval has been with this whole Meghan Markle thing, because there's been a lot of comparisons with how the media has treated her in such a positive light compared to how the media has treated Meghan Markle. And I wonder if that's actually had any kind of impact on how people view her, not for anything that she's done, but just because of like, she's received a lot of kind of, nice treatment by the media.
According to this YouGov poll, Meghan Markle has an approval rating of 55%.
Yeah.
Which is pretty low. But I think what's possibly perhaps more significant in relation to what you just said, Alex, is that Kate Middleton has a disapproval rating of 13%. And Meghan has a disapproval rating of 35%.
I see. So if people don't like her, they really go for it.
Yeah.
The media is successfully making Meghan come across badly. We can at least say that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I've never actually pinned down what people that don't like her think that she's actually physically done. I understand that they make points about her splitting up the royal family and taking Harry. What has she actually done?
Oh, Martin, can't you just tell that she's just manipulative? You know, she's
You can just tell.
There's something about her. I can't place it. Something deep in my gut just tells me she's a wrong one. I am joking, by the way, for anyone listening. I just want to clarify that. That's a joke.
You've seen that argument too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen Eamon Holmes making a fool of himself.
Oh, yes. That was awful.
Yeah.
What did he say? What happened there?
What an absolute scumbag.
He was just like, I've never met her, but I can just tell she's a wrong one. It's like, what? What the hell?
Ridiculous.
That is crazy.
And then the responses were quite good. Like, I've never met you, but I can tell you're a fat twat. Yeah. yeah. Which there was more evidence for, wasn't there, after comments like that?
Yeah.
That's true, yeah. Well, bringing it back around to the royal family, I have a statistic here that might kind of clinch the question.
Okay.
Which is, can the royal family continue? Financially speaking, there's $104 million given to them every year by the British taxpayer. But through tourism, the royal family brings in $2.4 billion every year, according to Forbes.
See, it's a lot of money.
What I never got with that argument is we've never not had a royal family. So how would we? How can we tell how many tourists they bring in?
It's true. And is that just based on people saying that when they were over in London, they went to see Buckingham Palace? Or is it gate admissions to different sites that are tourist attractions based around the royal family? Is it merchandise in those little London shops?
Yeah, well, interestingly, that statistic includes $720 million in tourism. So if tourism is limited to just tickets sold and people visiting Buckingham Palace and stuff like that, then yeah, there's another $1.5 billion that's generated from something else.
Yes. Yeah. And I imagine that would be people staying in hotels in the country, and then maybe in surveys saying that part of the reason they came was to see the certain attractions that were to do with the royal family. But I mean, the real question here is, would people still come to London, would they come to England and the UK if it wasn't for the royal family? Would as many come along? Maybe not quite as many, but I imagine that Britain would still be a fairly attractive place to come to, regardless of a monarchy.
We'd still have the history of it all as well, which I think would still attract people.
Yeah. I would still go to Buckingham Palace, even if the monarchy didn't exist. In fact, I'd probably be more likely to go there, because it's a sense of history lost, and the whole, like, oh, wow, this is what it was like. Yeah, whenever I go abroad, I don't know about you guys, but I go to historic sites, and I don't go there because there's someone living there.
Yeah.
I go there because someone interesting used to live there.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. I mean, they obviously, for the economy, there's obviously a point to be made, for sure. I don't think that's necessarily a justification. And I do think that the people that would visit to see the royal family would also come to the country regardless. Maybe that number wouldn't be as high as it is, but it would still be significant, especially if they're taking out a certain amount out of the economy each year as well. I mean, they're given 104 million, right?
Yes.
Does that include things? I mean, I take it that includes everything like policing events and all of that security and everything like that.
I was unclear on this. I think security is actually arranged on an ad hoc basis by wherever they're going.
Because that's got to be insane, especially for certain events. Yeah. Like a lot of the, the Jubilees is a kind of a crazy example, because every policeman in the whole of London's there for the Jubilee, right, with security. But days like that would cost tens of millions, surely.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't the Harry and Meghan security for that wedding cost like $5 million or something crazy like that? I'm just going to check that stat.
Then I guess that's where a lot of the tourism probably came from as well, like the weddings and big events with loads of people coming over for that, which I guess if the monarchy didn't exist, I guess for those kind of events, people wouldn't come over for. How often do they happen for that to really justify having them?
It's true. I mean, by the same credit, you could say that football matches for football teams spend so much in security for their match days, but you still do it because it's profitable.
Yeah.
It's kind of the argument could still exist for having the monarchy and then being positive based on those factors, but then not everything should be justified by its economic benefit.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you there. When you've got a political institution, it shouldn't be about its economic benefits. It should be about its political significance, right?
Exactly.
A lot of people, though, would say the way our constitution, well, our unwritten constitution is organized, that it is very valuable to have the head of state, who is an impartial, technically apolitical figure, who sits there, and all authority stems from the monarch, and there's that kind of level above the elected officials who exists. People say there's a huge advantage to that. What do you think?
So there's always someone, I guess, like, is that, so there's always someone to put the Prime Minister in their place, kind of thing? Is that what you kind of mean? Like, but with authoritarian power.
Exactly.
So like a Putin could never happen over here, because the Queen would slap them down.
Yes, in theory. There's that weird theory where by having an authoritarian figure at the top of our constitutional tree, we actually avoid having dictators because the actual political power of that authoritarian figure is zero, because all the power or the ability to pass laws comes from Parliament. But they need the signature of the monarch, in this case our queen, in order for those laws to actually become legal. So there's that figure that will prevent any dictator from really existing in our country.
That's a pretty good point, actually. I quite like that.
It's an interesting point. I think it falls down on two accounts. The first one being that the head of state doesn't really have the power to challenge the government, as we know. You can look at, there's numerous examples of that. And also, if the head of state did have that power, then they could use it unconstitutionally or immorally as a result. So it's like, they don't have it, but if they did, it would be a bad thing.
That's true. And I think it only works at the moment with the Queen. I think the royal family, the main obstacle they're going to have to go through over the next like generation, I guess, is when the Queen passes, and that passing of the torch, I think, because the Queen's been in power for what, like 60, 70 years? How long has she been reigning
over
for?
60. 53 was the coronation, so maths.
Yeah, nearly 70 years.
A long while.
Yeah, a very long time.
Yeah, I think that handover is going to be the real test of the monarchy. Whenever
it's true, Like the next monarch, it'll be interesting to see whether they have, or how long it takes them to get that respect from those in government, because the Queen has that lasting respect because she's seen, especially from a public opinion point of view, as being old and wise, and she's looked after the country and she's done lots of great work, which is. All those things may well be true, but would they still feel that way about, say, Charles? Maybe, because he's older. But Prince William, would they? You know, it's interesting. I'm not sure.
Although his popularity is as high as hers, as we've just discussed.
That's true.
You know, I think, I mean, we also know that his popularity skyrocketed when he got hitched to Kate Middleton. She's done wonders for the popularity of the royal family, I think. And it all coincided with the Jubilee in 2012, which coincided with the Olympics in London in 2012. So I think they've had a really good 10, 15 years, the royal family. And I think if you go back 20, 30 years, they weren't very popular.
Land of Hope and Glory has been on repeat for a while, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
So the street parties and all sorts.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, Brexit is also tied to that kind of recent surge in national pride, I think. So it's clearly there in the country. And I think as long as that stays around, the monarchy is probably pretty safe.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just a question of, can anything happen to, you know, destroy that faith and that love for the royal family? And I can't imagine. I mean, just to get dark for a moment, I feel like if coronavirus were to wipe out all the key figures in the royal family this year, then you might see big questions being raised as to whether the monarchy should continue. Because we'd suddenly have a 5-year-old boy on the throne, you know, and it would be like, okay, is this really what we want?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be a different situation that we'd be talking about, wouldn't it?
Yeah, very different. What do you guys listening at home think? Please let us know. If you're watching us on YouTube, there should be a poll in the corner of the video somewhere. And if you're listening to us on any of the other podcast platforms, whatever your chosen poison is, please let us know on Twitter at JInterestingYT. Have I got that right?
Boom, you have.
That's right, yeah.
I have, yes.
Correct.
@JInterestingYT. Or you can message us individually. I'm at All Time Robin.
I'm at All Time Martin.
I'm at AlexBrownATC.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Do you guys want to do a quiz?
I'd love to do a quiz,
yes.
Yes! Okay, time for the weekly quiz. And today, there is a theme. There's a trick, actually. The theme and the trick are none of the answers are to do with coronavirus.
Okay. That's a, so they're just normal, that's a pretty loose theme.
It's a loose theme. And if you say any words connected with it, I may dock a point.
I see.
What?
Oh, now you're worried, aren't you?
Yeah, okay. I'm a bit.
Yes. So, buzzers, gentlemen. Martin, what's yours?
My buzzer is it's quite simple but effective. Old school Falcon. Oh.
Oh, I prefer that one. Go for that one.
Okay, no, it's changed. Yeah, it's changed. It's actually DJ Falcon.
Nice.
That's my buzzer.
Okay. Classic. I like it. Yeah. Alex, what's your buzzer?
I've gone for an absolute classic.
This is a California Champagne by Paul Masson.
Drunk
horse.
Drunk horse.
Combine those two. That'd be great. so let's get on with our quiz. 10 questions and bonus question if you want it. And because coronavirus is dominating all the headlines, let's try not to mention it. All right, guys.
Okay.
I like it. This is a good idea. I'm intrigued. I'm not going to say that at the end of the quiz, but
no, you're going to hate it.
Not going to say what.
Hey, nice one, Martin. I like it. So, question number one. Which Mexican lager is traditionally served ice cold with a slice of lime in the bottleneck? Martin?
Sol.
It is Sol. Well done.
But, thank you. Okay, fair enough, that was impressive. Right? But, yeah. There is that other one. Yes. Would that not count?
That would not count.
But why?
What other one?
Because it's related to the thing that we're not going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
You see what I mean? Any words and derivatives, you know, you're getting the impression.
Okay.
There?
Okay.
Okay. So, question number two. Something that spreads or proliferates rapidly could be described as...
There's a California champagne by Paul Masson. Yes,
Alex? Rabbits.
What?
That is not what I was looking for.
Breeding like rabbits.
No.
I almost tempted to give you a point, but that's not what I was looking for. An adjective than a noun.
Okay. Wildfire.
No, that's also...
It's also a noun.
That's also a noun. I won't keep you guessing for too long. It's a word that you've definitely heard, and it's a very positive sounding one. In fact, it's something that a flamboyant person might do. Do something with a...
Well, mine's gone blank.
Yeah.
That's all right. It's a tough one. Flourishing.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking nice. Flourishing. Yeah, that was the word I said. But I didn't think that was a good description. I don't know.
Well, I was trying to think of synonyms for the V word, and I was just like, all just really negative.
Yeah. All right, well, question number three. That was the hardest question, I think, so we should get easier from now on.
I'm amazed you've got 10.
Yeah.
What is the name for a type of program designed to harm a computer device or network?
It's excellence. Oh. This is California champagne.
Oh, I heard Orson Welles first, so Alex?
Malware.
Oh, that's what I was going for.
It is malware. Well done. Well done. So that's one all.
Thank you.
One all going into question four. In January 2019, the UK's National Health Service removed thousands of what type of machine made by Dyson from hospitals?
Celebrated for its excellence. There is a California champ.
Fans.
Oh, spot on, yes. Bladeless Dyson fans.
Why do they have Dyson fans and they're so expensive?
What?
Yeah.
Exactly. So they've been bought at great expense, on whose directive, I do not know, when they were introduced in 2013, because they have been kind of assumed that they were better for hospitals because ordinary blade fans collect dust and have to be cleaned, yeah?
Right, okay.
Mm.
And then in January 2019, the NHS had done a study and said, actually, the bladeless fans naturally accumulate dust and debris, providing a reservoir for microorganisms.
Oh.
So, you think they might have tested one before buying them all in.
You'd think, yeah. So they wasted millions of pounds on something that they just had to remove. Oops. Okay, so 2-1 to Alex, I think, going into question 5. What is a Latin word for crown?
I mean, I've got an idea, but I don't want to say it.
Why is it, Alex?
No, I can't say it. How strict is this kind of...
Pretty strict.
So you can't say anything that sounds like the thing.
I may not dock a point, but you know, you kind of lose some respect
okay.
if you say
Well, that's not the answer that you're looking for then.
I can give you a clue. There is a popular game that contains this word in its name.
I'm trying to think. What about...
Oh. Yeah, Martin?
I don't know. Charte.
No. Charte. You're thinking of Uncharted.
Big time.
Imaginative, but no. Alex, you got any guesses?
I'm looking over at my games collection and I can't see anything. Unless it's a Far Cry. No, I don't know.
Nice try.
No, I think you have to give us this one.
Okay, well, okay, fingers on buzzers. The final clue is we've played this.
There's a California champagne.
I heard Alex first, I'm afraid.
Apex.
Yes.
Yes, Apex is the word. Yeah.
Wow.
Also means pinnacle, top, but yeah. Crown when relating to a thing that goes on your head.
Fair enough.
I think that's 3-1 to Alex.
Yeah.
Question number six. Still talking about games, but this time board games. Nope. Which board game designed by Matt Leacock involves up to 4 players working together to solve international emergencies? Yeah, Martin?
We're not allowed to use the word, are we?
No.
So it's international spread.
I mean, that is the game disease. That you shouldn't say, so well done for avoiding the word, but it's not the game I'm looking for. Actually looking for a different game. But well done for not saying it. That's good.
What could you describe the board game for me again, please, Robin?
I'll repeat the question. It's a board game designed by Matt Leacock, involving up to 4 players working together to solve international emergencies.
Is it like a well-known board game? Would we have heard of it, do you reckon?
Probably not, to be fair.
Oh.
But you have definitely heard of the IP. So I'll give you a clue. It's a game based on a 60s kids TV show that was very popular in the UK.
There's a California champagne bar.
Yeah, Alex?
I think it's too early, actually. I buzzed too soon. It's not Scooby-Doo related, is it?
It's not.
I was thinking international mysteries.
That's good thinking. Good thinking.
Not emergencies.
But it's not a cartoon. It's not a cartoon.
Is it puppets?
It is puppets.
Is it? My buzzer's not doing its thing. It's just going around in circles.
Oh, there we go.
Could it be Thunderbirds?
It is Thunderbirds, yes. Well done.
What's the actual name of the
board game? International Rescue. Thunderbirds, the board game, I think.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I was hoping there was have some like official name that Martin wouldn't have got right.
No, sorry, he got it right. So that's 3-2. Catching up. But yeah, it's same designer. In fact, it plays very similarly to Pandemic, which I just mentioned. But I'm the quizmaster, so I'm allowed to say it. Okay, question number 7. this is something that's, people have been talking about it, but which 2007 film follows a group of scientists attempting to solve a global crisis?
What? Is there another name for it?
2007 film?
Yes. Yeah, thinking about the question now.
I don't remember the film.
There's a California champagne
I can't remember when this film came out. Was it Day After Tomorrow?
No, that is 2004. But good answer, actually. That could have also worked for this question.
Working together to solve a crisis. 2007. How old was I in 2000? Okay.
I don't actually know what's the. Oh no, I don't actually no, even know what the trap answer is in this.
I'll give you a clue if you like.
Okay.
This is a. It's about scientists attempting to solve a global crisis, but it's a superhero movie.
So 2007. Okay, so 2007. Is that the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Did it start then?
No, that started in 2008.
2008. Okay, so it's not that.
What films? Yeah,
they are not in the Marvel Cinematic Universe yet.
There is a California champagne bomb.
Alex,
Fantastic Four.
Close.
Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Yes. Well done. It is the sequel. Oh, ho, ho.
You were going to get knowledge. Me on the sequel. Why would I know the, when the sequel of Fantastic Four
but you
came
did,
out?
Alex. By you did.
Yeah, okay.
Isn't that meant to be really rubbish?
It's the best Fantastic Four movie.
There was a reboot one that you might be thinking of, which was really,
yeah,
really
that's on
terrible.
Netflix right now, actually. Fantastic.
I see.
It's,
Fan-four-stick.
Fantastic, yeah.
Doesn't sound good.
It's almost worth watching for how bad it is, but it's not. Okay, so that is 4-3. Okay, 4-2 to Alex going into question 8. Woo-hoo-hoo. Ah, this is a question. Fingers on buzzers. Which beer appears prominently in The Fate of the Furious, also known as Fast and Furious 8?
I haven't seen any of these. This is literally superhero and Fast and Furious. I mean, and Latin.
In Fate of the Furious.
Let's just guess. It's not even playing now.
Well, the thing is, there's the obvious one, but then can I describe it? Oh, go on.
That was Martin. Yeah.
Is it Budweiser?
Yes, it is. Well done.
What?
Is that right?
When is that?
It is right. So, Fate of the Furious is. Out of interest, the only movie in the franchise that does not feature product placement for the beer that shall not be named.
Oh my god, yeah, you're right.
Really?
You're right. It's at the end, isn't it, when they're around the around the table.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an idiot.
I see.
So stupid. Come on, Alex, that's the question.
4-3, question 9. Oh, this is gonna be close,
I'm embarrassed now. I'm never going to live that down.
Okay. On the internet, what is the term for a phenomenon that spreads by means of imitation from person to person?
There is a California champagne.
Oh man.
That was... Sorry, go on. Who did you say?
I don't know. Oh, really hard to tell. Might have been Paul Masson.
So I have a guess?
Yeah.
Memes?
It is memes. Martin, what were you going to say?
Well, of course, memes.
Oh, you were. Oh. Sorry, Martin. If
that's all good.
It's difficult. I don't know.
So instantaneous. It was really hard to tell. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's tough when there's a delay as well because.
Yeah.
From my point of view, of course, I would always back mine, but mine's right here, whereas I'm getting a delay from Alex's.
Yeah, in fairness,
so I'd always back my own.
I was pretty sure it was me, but then there was a delay, so I don't know. So yeah. Sorry, Martin. So we share a point.
No, it's okay. That's all right.
Come on.
I suppose if I were a good quizmaster, I might have given that to Martin to give him the chance to equalise. That would have been a really tense question 10, wouldn't it? That would have been the smart thing to do. But no.
Well, it'll be fair to the quiz, though. So.
Question 10, then. Final question.
Cool.
In Latin, what does the word vaccinus mean? Yes, Martin.
To protect.
No, although I like the way you're thinking. Yeah.
Thanks.
Vax.
Wrong, but thanks.
Think bovine.
How does that help?
I'm just thinking bovine.
I don't think I'm going to get this.
Yeah. Okay, go for it.
It means of, relating to, or derived from a cow.
Okay.
Because the word for cow in Latin is vacca, and we get the word vaccine from the first vaccine, which was for cowpox.
Okay, nice.
Yeah,
that's interesting. That's an interesting fact.
Yeah, so I find that quite funny that we're being kind of injected by cow. Of the cow is what we're injecting ourselves with all the time.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Very so good word, Alex.
Thank you. Alex.
Yeah, that was
first time ever.
Victory for Alex. Woo.
Thank you.
Your day came eventually.
Yeah, there was some kind of didn't he steal that point from Martin there, but overall I think it was fair enough. Yeah.
I mean,
thank you. No, Martin, I think it was a good win.
If Martin had it though, you'd be tied, right? And then it'll be bonus question time, right?
I think I was still winning by one.
Oh,
wait, no, actually, because we didn't get the last one, did we? Yeah, no, you would have won any, regardless.
Yeah, sealed the deal. Well done.
Very good.
Would you like the extra question?
Yeah, why not?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, this one is not related at all to the coronavirus in any way, so you don't have to avoid any answers. It's closest wins. Okay.
Cool.
So, how many adults in the UK drink alcohol? Give me a percentage.
Oh, percentage.
Yeah.
How many adults in the UK?
Okay, I've got a figure in my mind. Shall I go first?
You can do, but you know what Alex is going to do.
I know exactly what he's going to do, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to go for 71%.
Okay. See, I was going to go much higher, in fairness. I was going to say 86%.
Okay. Alex is closer. It's 81%.
81, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So
I expect that will change after in a few years' time. Because
I imagine that's changed.
Under 25s, it's like 50%.
Really? Oh, right. So it's younger people are drinking less and less. Is that?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
Younger people are drinking a lot less nowadays.
This was in a 2017 survey by the NHS, and as well as the 81% who said that they do drink alcohol, 19% said they hadn't drunk at all in the previous year.
Okay.
And 4% said they drank more than 50 units per week.
What's that, 50 units?
It's not good.
What percent?
4% said they drank over 50 units per week.
That sounds like a lot.
A standard pint is 2 units.
Oh, wow, there's a lot.
That's a huge amount.
That's like 25 pints in a week. Oh, per week.
That's a lot.
Wow. If you drink stronger beer, then that's fewer pints. But still, that is a huge amount of beer to be drinking.
Yeah.
All right, then. Well, victory to Alex. His first victory in the quiz. Well done. It was a long time coming, but you earned it. You earned it.
Thank you.
And well done, both of you, for avoiding the trap answers. That was fantastic.
Thank you, Robin.
Skillfully dodged.
Good quiz. Well thought out.
Thank you. I don't mind admitting it took me forever to come up with questions that could be traps. No, it wasn't too bad. It was quite fun. It was lots of fun. So thank you for you at home listening to us rattle on for a long time about the monarchy and not about the coronavirus. And hope you're all staying safe at home. And please tune in if you're a Patreon supporter for our Patreon-exclusive podcast right after this. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. See you later.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.